Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. There's a legal storm brewing, and it's one that could wreak havoc on the recording industry. This week, the New York Times reported on a little-known provision in the U.S. copyright law. Starting in the year 2013, it'll give artists and songwriters the chance to take back ownership of some of their older material from the record labels. Now, that doesn't mean the labels are going to give up their rights without a fight. To help us make sense of this, we are joined by intellectual property lawyer Jonathan Reichman. John, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm confused. give me a crash course on termination rights.
Sure. The idea behind this is what's known as the second bite of the apple. And when Congress enacted the copyright law, they had a concern that artists at the outset of their careers wouldn't be able to really fairly value how successful their works could be. And they were concerned that the artist could grant complete, absolute life of the copyright rights to a record company for a little amount of money because nobody knew what it was going to be worth. Then it would prove to be a huge bonanza, and the artist would not get to fairly share in the value of that. So what the copyright law says is that no matter how unlimited or long-term this grant of rights to the record company or movie studio or any company is, the artist can step in after 35 years, terminate that grant of rights, and force the record company to sit back down to the bargaining table, at the bargaining table, and cut a new deal that fairly reflects the true value, the true commercial worth of the song, of the recording.
Wow. So, and the magic year in this case is 1978. That's if your recording was made in 1978, it will become eligible for these termination rights in the year 2013, like the Bruce Springsteen record, Darkness on the Edge of Town, that we were just hearing.
That's right. Any work that was created in 78 was the subject of a license or an assignment in 1978 or thereafter. You calculate 35 years from that date, and the artist can step in and force a new negotiation.
But you have to alert the record label that you're doing that, that you're planning to do that.
Correct. There's this whole procedure laid out in the Copyright Act. There's a five-year window. It's from the 35th year to the 45th year after the grant was made. And you have to give the record company advance notice within a window of 2 years before you intend to terminate or 10 years before. So there's this eight-year window. And if you don't pay attention to these windows, if you let this time period go by, then the artist has waived that right, and she can't recapture her right, and then the record company gets to control that recording or that song for the whole life of the copyright.
Right. Now, let me just follow up on something that you said sort of in the middle there. You said if your recording or your movie, is this the – I mean, do filmmakers, authors – I mean, how many different art forms are we talking about here with this?
Any kind of work that's protected by copyright, whether a book, a poem, a song, a movie, it's received a lot of attention in the recording industry because I think the recording artists have been probably more savvy than most in terms of honing in on this right and realizing they have it and taking advantage of it. That's where all the news has been generated.
Right. Larry Roeder in the New York Times has written a couple of articles about it, and Soundcheck listeners, you can find both of those articles, if you miss them, on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. And as we often do when we're trying to figure out copyright and trademarking and anything with intellectual property, we're speaking with Jonathan Reichman, a partner at Kenyon & Kenyon LLP. And what is the industry's best argument to push back against artists who are saying, you've had your 35 years, I want my record back?
Well, it's very interesting. Because this law was enacted to protect the potentially individual loan-struggling artist, there was a carve-out, an exception, saying that this termination right did not apply to works that were called works made for hire. In other words, In other words, works that were done by the record company and where the recording artist was working at their control and almost like an employee.
Right.
And so the record companies are of course, going to argue, hey, these sound recordings are all works made for hire, so we are the copyright owner, not you, artist, and therefore you have no right to terminate. And that's where these big battles are going to be taking place.
Now, what do you think about this work-for-hire exception? Do you think that'll fly in the courts?
I think it's going to be a tough road to hoe for the record companies, because there was a major Supreme Court case that came out about 20 years ago that laid down the standards for what constitutes a work made for hire. And it has to be sort of on traditional employee-employer concepts. In other words, did the record company withhold Social Security, or withholding? Did they pay Social Security? Did they withhold employment taxes? Did they provide all of the tools, the equipment for the recording to be made? I think in a lot of cases, though, the recording artist went out and had to do the recording on their own. They had to hire the engineer. They had to hire the studio, the facilities. Now, the record company may have advanced them the money.
Right.
But then the record company would be recouping that out of royalties. So I think, bottom line, that the performers, the artists, have a pretty good argument that it's not a work made for hire.
Now, the recording industry is already, you know, its woes are well documented. What do you think? Could this be a fatal blow?
I don't think it'll be fatal. I think, you know, the recording industry and the artists have a mutual incentive in trying to resolve this. And I know there are a lot of furious back-channel negotiations and discussions going on to try to come up with a way to settle these disputes, despite, you know, the availability of free and unlimited distribution to artists over the Internet. The record companies are still very, very valuable to them in promotion, in publicity, in being behind merchandising. So I don't think the artists and performers have a real incentive in seeing these recording companies take a further huge hit at the end of the day, which this termination right can potentially pose.
So you're expecting that they'll sit down, they'll hammer out an agreement that more fairly, you know, compensates people like, say, Billy Joel for the success of his 1978 album called 52nd Street.
That's what I'd like to see. Whether saner heads will prevail, who knows?
All right. Jonathan Reichman is a partner at Kenyon & Kenyon LLP, an intellectual property law firm here in New York. He joins us to discuss this sort of thing pretty regularly on Soundcheck. John, nice talking with you again.
Thank you, John. Take care.
And the magic year, 1978. Those recordings become eligible for so-called termination rights in 2013. This, no doubt, will be one of them, Billy Joel's 52nd Street. All your friends were so knocked out. You had to have the last word last night. You know what everything's about. You had to have a white hot spotlight. You had to be a big shot. Still to come, they're a six-piece band from Brooklyn that enjoys the poetry of both Wendell Berry and Axl Rose. And they're your Soundcheck blind date, and they're up next.